From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beater.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And I'm Vance Morrison.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. So we're back again with Vance this week. Going to do a little more perf view, but before we get to that, we got to say, as we tape this, we just watched an amazing football game yesterday, NFC Championship, and this is going to go out, this is going to run on Super Bowl week, right?
Yep.
So go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
We love the Hawks. Sorry, you know, if you're a fan of the Patriots, or our hearts go out to you Green Bay Packers fans, but sorry,
yeah.
We won. That's how it is. All right. So what else is going on? We got Tech Ready.
Yeah, it's a Tech Ready this week. So Tech Ready is the internal conference, kind of like Build and what used to be called Tech Ed, which is now called Ignite, combined.
Mm-hmm.
Happens for Microsoft Internal. Same speeches, though. And Vance and I and Max Cho. So Vance is going to talk about Perfview, which is more about specifically how to look at exceptions and CLRs issues. Then I'm going to do my second bit, which is on Bang Analyze. And then the third bit is on Watson. So how to roughly see it at the instance level, how to look at the analysis level, and then how to look at it at scale. And so that's what that talk's about.
Yeah.
10:15 on Thursday. So if you're internal, turn up in person or watch the webcast internally. This one's kind of focused on, you know, the ecosystem of availability.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a second speech, also called Hardcore Debugging, called Techniques, which also runs at 2:30 on Thursday. So tune into those. And
so those people who work for Microsoft or coming to Tech Ready can check those out.
Yep, definitely. Right and on. Then that's the speeches that get conglomerated together and turn into the Build and the and the Ignite ones. Talking of which, get your tickets.
Get your tickets for Build and Ignite.
Yep. So, which I think is mid-year sometime.
It's like,
June something?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But soon, get your tickets before they sell out.
That's right. Get your tickets and download Windows 10. Can we say that?
We can.
All right. All right. So Vance is here. We're going to talk a little bit about garbage collection.
That's
right. We did go into this in depth back in episodes, 33 through 36 with Mayoni. Who's the architect, I want to say, or
principal?
She's the principal dev.
Something. Anyway, she's the honcho, the head honcho of garbage collection.
Yeah, one, two, and three were about how to debug it, so it was all debugger focused.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a very quick glance at doing it with Perfview, but we didn't really go into much detail.
Right.
So that's what Vance is going to do today.
Let's do that.
The Perfview Master and do the full DC deep dive.
Yeah, I should mention that, you know, while you can do a bunch of things with the debugger, and it's quite with respect to the CLR GC, and that can be very handy if you have crash dumps, because that's pretty much what you get. What you find is that Mayoni, myself, and the other people who deal with the CLR GC all the time, we really need these traces. This is the primary tool that we use in order to investigate GC issues. So what I got here, just to sort of show you what's going on, is I have a test. This first of all, the way you collect this data is you can collect it with the standard mechanism. That is, you just say Perfview collect, and you let it run while your app is running. Now, it turns out that sometimes GC issues, they are sort of slow motion issues. They happen over the course of hours rather than minutes. It's not like something goes wrong immediately. It's sort of like the memory keeps creeping up and up and up and up over the day, and then finally it gets too big and somebody recycles the process. So for those cases, you can also collect GC data where you only collect things for the GC. So the normal defaults is we collect CPU samples, we collect disk IOs, lots of other events.
Mm-hmm.
That limits the amount of time that you get to about, you know, something under 5 minutes. You only get a 5 minute trace or less with that. With the GC, it turns out we have two different modes. One is called, you can say Perfview, and you can say GC, GC only, and then collect. So if you did that, what will happen is that you will only get things that are associated with the CLR GC. Now, it turns out the most voluminous event that we do when we're just collecting GC information is what's called the allocation tick, and I'll explain that a little bit more. And that's basically giving you a sample of when allocations are happening. But if you just, if you turn this on in a normal size file, you'll probably get an hour or two of data. If you want it to be days, you can cut down even more and you can say GC collect only. And that will only collect the events when a GC collection happens. And as you can imagine, that's much less. The GC collections don't happen very often. And you can get to days with a normal trace file size. So that allows you to do these very slow motion things. So however you collect it, either by just collecting it normally or collecting it either with GC only or GC collect only, you'll get, what will happen is you always get, and I'm going into the events view, and I'm basically just looking for all GC events. And you'll see that here they are. These are all the GC events that the CLR is logging. And in fact, this allocation tick is the only one that's really common. All the other ones pretty much only happen when GCs happen. Now, it turns out looking at these raw events is very painful. They're very difficult to decode in a useful way. And so we have special views. And so I'm going to show you those views right now. The main one is what's called the GC stats view. And when you double click on it, what you'll get is we do this per process. So there might be 10 processes that each have their own GC. They each are doing completely different things, right? They're different processes. And so you have to pick which process you want. And these things are sorted by the size of the GC heap. So usually the one that you want is at the top, because usually that's your problem, is the one guy with the biggest heap. Mm-hmm. So usually you click there, and now we get the statistics, the sort of what we believe are the most important things that you would need to know about the GC just to find out if the GC is healthy. Some useful things, among other things, is like what kind of GC you are. Now, this one actually is saying I'm concurrent GC, but more in particular, it doesn't have the server GC. If you saw a server GC, you would know that you were using the .NET server GC, which is actually a very different kind of behavior as far as its performance characteristics from the what's called the workstation GC. So the fact that that isn't there means that I'm running workstation GC.
That's where MS Core DAC, or MS Core Works, WKS, originally derived from.
That's right. That's right. Although it turned out that long ago we used to have two separate runtime DLLs. Yeah. MS Core WKS for workstation and MS Core SVR for server. Yeah. And we would load one or the other depending upon which kind of GC you wanted. Later we decided that cloning the whole runtime just because, and the only thing that was different is the GC. Mm. So what we did was we pulled the GCs out and we made an interface to the GC, and so we could store both of them in a single image. Yeah. And so we tossed the server version of the DLL because the workstation DLL now has both.
Gotcha.
But historically we don't change names unless we have to. So
and then it got renamed to CLR.
Indeed, and then fixed it again. So
And Core CLR for Silverlight.
But now it's the case that every .NET runtime has both, and that it is chosen at startup time. You either stick in your config file, or either the host, if you're launched from native code, decides what kind of GC you are. But it basically happens when the runtime starts up, and it never changes. Mm. In broad strokes, I mean, you've already gone over this with Naomi, I'm sure, but the server GC is designed for throughput. It tries to make the best use of the machine, which means it tries to parallelize the GC as much as possible. The workstation, on the other hand, is designed for interactivity. It wants low pause times and low impact to the rest of the program. So those are your trade-offs. I'm sure we've talked about that in the past, about those basic trade-offs. So here we are. We're going to just look at this. The first thing I mentioned was, we now know it's a workstation GC. It's not the server GC. And this table is pretty handy as just sort of a general health. It said, it's basically, as you've talked about in the past, we have a generational GC, which means that things start out in Gen 0, and then as they survive, they move into the higher generations. And that's because young objects tend to die quickly. So what you're hoping is and so this table is showing you by generation, so here's the generation 0, 1, and 2, how many did you have, what was the maximum pause, blah, 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 a bunch of statistics. And so what you really kind of want to see is you want to see the number of Gen 0 GCs to be much higher than the number of Gen 1s, which is hopefully much higher than the number of Gen 2s. You also hope that these max pause times are all very small. So in other words, in this particular trace, there was a time for almost 300 milliseconds where the program was not doing anything except doing a GC. It was not making any forward progress. For really large heaps, for like 5 gigabyte heaps, that can be seconds. And you can imagine seconds is bad. So as the perf guy for the .NET CLR, .NET runtime, if you have second style pauses, that's bad. You should not at this point. There's something wrong. We have a background GC now, so really, if things are tuned, you really shouldn't be seeing anything over a second. In fact, even this 300 milliseconds is higher than we would like. It's a little hot. And we can, the very next thing that we probably care about.
So before we jump on, is that really, is it a solid rule regardless of what type of hardware you're on? If you have a really low end machine versus a big server, can you give it a bit of leeway because of?
Yeah, you can. So when I'm, well, first of all, like that pause time is really an end user metric. Like you don't want it to be above or a second because a person will tell, like you will see something not working or stalled. So that's why the second is important. Now, you know, what's true is that you can process on a reasonably current machine per processor, you can do about half a gigabyte of GC heap per second. So if you keep your, you know, and so with that number, you can sort of figure out how many processors you have and blah, blah, blah. You can sort of figure out what you'd expect. Now, if you're running on really, really low-end hardware, well, you might have to factor that down some more.
But you don't tend to have the memory, I guess. So there's a lower-end machines tend to have smaller
memory.
And smaller memory. So.
You don't tend to use them as servers. Normally, you don't create really large heaps unless you're a server, usually. Yeah. Or you're a very large app, like Visual Studio. So if you have, I tell people general rules of thumb about memory is that if you're under 100 megabyte GC heap, you know, look for low-hanging fruit, but it's not a big deal. When you start to get into the, you know, somewhere in the 100 megabytes to a 1 gigabyte, you should be thinking, like, is there a way that you can avoid, like, you know, needing that much memory? And if you're above a gigabyte, really? I mean, you know, do you really? Because it's now going to cost you, every time you do a Gen 2 GC, you have to scan a gigabyte or 5 gigabytes or however big your heap is. You have to scan all that. It's going to cost. Now, we do it in the background and so forth, but it always comes back to, you know, cost value. If you need 5 gigabytes of data handy all the time, well, okay, you need it. But if you don't, if those are just, you're doing requests and you're saying, why should one request need 5 gigabytes of data? Well, why, you know, at this point you could say, well, maybe it's better if we do requests in separate processes so that each heap is smaller. And that's a relatively easy thing to do, and we'll solve the GC heap problem. So general rules of thumb, you know, above a gigabyte, you should be thinking about it. If you're above 5 or 10, you really should be thinking about it.
Like, I think it's the same argument for C++ or any other language. Yeah, it's just excessive. Full
stop. 5 gigabytes of anything will take a while, period. I just did the wrong thing there.
Unplugged it.
I unplugged my... I think we'll be back though. Yeah, it's back.
It's back.
All right, we're back. Okay, so we talked about one thing about health, which is that if the GC size is small, that's better. What we also like to see is that if you're doing Gen 2s, you're doing them far less frequently than Gen 1s and Gen 0s, and that's what this thing will tell me. And I expect the pause times to be very small. So we can see some interesting. The other thing that's interesting is that the amount of allocations per second, this is depending on your app. Your app will either allocate a lot or not. And I can tell you right now that if you're over a gigabyte a second, you are in outer space. That is a lot.
You are thrashing.
Under 100 megabytes a second. 100 megabytes a second's a lot, but it's not insane. But a gigabyte a second, what are you doing? You know, is there a way that you can avoid that? In this particular case, you can see that we're allocating 7 gigabytes a second. And that's because this is a benchmark. That's all it does. So if I am running as fast as I possibly can allocated on this particular machine, I can do 7 gigs a second. Right. But hopefully you are doing far less than that. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second table, it turned out that the main table is actually this third table, but there are two subtables. The first one talks about long pauses, so pauses greater than 200 milliseconds. Under 200 milliseconds, you probably don't care. It's beneath the threshold that human beings, I mean, if as long as they don't happen very often, they're probably fine. And then the other thing we split out, so this is the one of sort of problematic GCs, and sometimes you just want to see those. Mm-hmm. And then here's another one of just Gen 2s, regardless of whether they're problematic or not. And actually, this one is showing you something very healthy, which is it's showing you that all the Gen 2s, except for this last one here, these last two, are called background GCs. So if you didn't know what these things were, you can hover over things, and it will tell you what these things mean. So you can hover over these things to find out, and it will tell you that this B means background and N means normal, and I means induced. That means somebody actually called GC collect. Okay. And we tell people not to do that, so that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the fact that we saw a non-background GC is not a good sign either. That can happen if we need a compacting collection. There are legitimate reasons, but you don't want to see those very often. You want to see mostly background GCs.
And is that why that one took so much longer too? Because you had to do the compacting.
The trick about this is pause time, not the time that it took the GC to accomplish its task. And so the whole point behind a background GC is you pause very quickly, and then you do a whole bunch of work in the background, and then you might have to pause again at the very end to sort of, you know, fix things up again, but every pause is very, very small. Right. Whereas a non-background GC, you stop, you do all your work, and then you start. So background GCs should always be under 100 milliseconds for the pause, even though the GC might be very long. And then the normal GCs are the ones that are going to hurt you and have very long pause times. The other number that's pretty handy here is this peak GC number. So what's going on here is every time you do a GC, you recover some memory. So the first GC happened, I don't understand that first one. Let's come back to that. It makes more sense in the context. Okay, so these are all my Gen 2s. And then this one is every GC that ever happened. And you can see there are only 126 GCs in this particular part of the trace that was collected. And what you can then scan down here, and you can see sort of how the heap size starts to grow. This is the peak size of the GC heap between the last GC and this current GC. So it starts out, it's 9, it's 6, and it's 12, 18, 28, and so forth. I'm sorry, the peak before. And let's see what's going on here. It's normally the case that this number, this peak is going to be larger than this second number. I don't actually understand why this second number is sometimes larger. You can see, like here, it was larger. And that's probably because there's slack space in the generations. Mm-hmm. Normally, that doesn't happen. So normally, in a steady state, which we can see down below, you pretty much always start out with something and it gets smaller. So we 131 to 127 and so on. And you would actually only expect big changes when you had a Gen 2.
So is this the creation of the initial segments? That's probably
What's going on is that you are seeing the sizes that the GC is using, like, you know, including slack space.
There's
So the peak is telling you what it was before the GC, but if the GC decided it needed to expand, then the after will include the expanded region, and so it could go up, even though you would expect if you do a GC, you should be reclaiming memory. Well, not if the GC thinks it needs more memory for the next GC, which is what's going on in some of those cases. But after steady state, you'd expect pretty much it's got the memory that it needs, and now it's just going to reclaim.
So you kind of like grow up to some commit point, which is made of multiple segments. Now within the segment, there's equivalent of reserved and committed, but it's all committed in memory sense. But notionally, it's free space and committed space.
That's right.
And everything's just being moved around, and just so happens that the moving around causes a new segment or whatever it is temporarily. But once you've solidified, then you can always fit in the gaps. And
that's true. I'd say it slightly differently in the sense that what's happened is that you've just done a GC. You probably have reclaimed some. Mm. But let's imagine you reclaimed almost nothing. Well, I'm about to do another set of allocations. I need some space to put it in. Mm. And I've just found out that I didn't have any. I couldn't reclaim it from trash. So I have to ask for more. And so that's what happens in the beginning, right? And so that's why the after looks bigger than the before, is that we got to a certain point, and then we tried to do a GC, very little was collected, and then we ended up asking for more so that we wouldn't run out immediately on the next allocation. But later, that won't happen. You'll have allocated everything you're going to allocate, and everything's cool. Yep. So you can see later, it does do what you expect. And you also expect that these numbers won't go down dramatically except on a Gen 2. So here's a Gen 2, and you can see we went from 288 down to 118.
Yeah.
So whereas Gen 0s are only going to collect Gen 0, so they can't possibly collect more than typically 10 megabytes or something like that. So that's what's going on there. This is believe it or not, this is the view that like Maoni and people like myself, we obsess over this view. This tells us a lot about what's going on in the GC. The things that I just want to point out, the sort of highlights. The highlights are trigger reason. It is that most of the time you expect the trigger reason. Again, you can hover over it to find out more. Allocate small means you are allocating on the small object heap. There's something called the large object heap that Naomi talked about. Mm-hmm. If you see alloc large, it means that it was a GC was caused because a large object was allocated. And if you see a lot of those, well, you're doing Gen 2 collections every time you do that. And what we tell people to do is please stop allocating large objects so frequently, like try to reuse them. That's a main thing that you get out of this. You also get out of this fact the pauses and exactly where they happen, how often they occur, everything about pauses, and everything about the GC size and things about rate. Those are the top level things. There's all sorts of other information in here for people who really want to dig deep on the GC, but those are the things that I think everyone can sort of usefully use. The other thing that I wanted to show you is let's assume that I did see an alloc large here. What you really are saying, well, I'm allocating large objects somewhere in my program, and therefore they're causing lots of GCs to happen, or Gen 2 GCs, which are the expensive GCs. I'd like to get rid of them. Well, I need to know where they are. That's where this other part comes into play, which is that what you also get for the GC, now this is the difference between GC collect and GC only and GC collect only. GC only gives you these allocation stacks as well. GC collect only will only give you enough for the GC stats. So GC collect only is enough for GC stats, but if you want the view that I'm about to show you, you need GC only. And what this one does is it looks very much like a CPU view, and you get to pick your process, and I'm gonna pick this GC test one because I know that's the one I'm interested in. And what this is showing me is the stack of every time 100,000 bytes is allocated, we take a snapshot, we take a stack. And so we get samples every 100,000 bytes, and we get to see where you're allocating. So if you're allocating a lot, it'll probably show up on one of those samples. And in particular, we know whether it's a large or a small object. So in fact, I thought this example, I'm sorry, I selected the wrong one. I selected this GC heap netmem. I meant to do this GC heap alloc ignore free. So I'll explain very quickly what these are. So you might care about allocations. Wherever it happened, it's bad. So for example, large object heap, I don't care where it got collected. I care about where it got allocated, and that's all I care about. That's what GC heap alloc ignore free. I'm ignoring frees, I'm ignoring collections. You might care about net memory. That's what you would care about if you're trying to figure out, okay, how much memory am I, you know, if the GC heap's too big, then I might care about that. So I'm going to select this alloc ignore free, and again, I'm going to flip in here. And what I find here is that it very helpfully segregates all things that are large objects into this one thing. And I can double click on this. And basically what I can do is this is showing me the callers of every place where a large object heap allocation happens. So there was 55 megabytes of large object heap. It was a byte array, which was the thing that was allocated. And it was allocated out of this function right here, alloc steady state, blah, 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 and then up the stack. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a large object heap problem, or large object allocation problem, this is pretty much exactly the piece of information. You now know the piece of code that's yours that was responsible for doing that large object allocation. And usually the fix is cache it, like remember it for the next time and reuse it if you can, until you can get the number of large object heap allocations down. So anyway, that's roughly speaking the two things that I want to talk about the GC. The first one was the GC stats, which gives you the general health of the GC. And then this allocation view, which lets you find out exactly where things are allocated. It'll also tell you sort of where those allocations die. But as I mentioned in one of our first videos, I recommend heap snapshots if you're actually just trying to figure out, you know, what's live and why it's live. This will tell you the allocation site, but usually that's not very interesting. It's who's holding on to it. Mm. So usually for memory investigations, you know, you're just trying to figure out why am I holding on to so much memory, or leak investigations, heap snapshots are better. But sometimes you can use allocation stacks, and it's useful to use those as well. So it does exist.
It's kind of like a transfer from straight leak detection to more of a performance view of the world, I guess.
You can do leak detection with this as well. Right? That's what this leak net mem will do. But it will tell you, the thing about the leaks is it will tell you where you allocated the objects that were leaking. But the problem with that is that doesn't tell you why they're alive. Yeah. Right? You want to kill them, right? If you have a leak, you want to find out, okay, who is keeping that alive? Well, you just found out who allocated it. Okay, I know who allocated it, but that's not the guy who was responsible for killing it.
Yeah.
The GC was responsible for killing it, and he only kills it when all the references are gone. So what I really want to know is who has a reference to these things that I think should be dead.
Right.
That's exactly what a heap dump tells you, and it's not what the allocation thing does. So it's useful occasionally, but I don't recommend it. When you have large, very rapid allocations, when you are in the gigabyte region, what you're basically saying there is I'm allocating too much. Mm-hmm. So again, allocations are bad. I don't even care where it's freed. So again, this view becomes useful to investigate that. So this is what we have for the GC investigation, and it's always been enough. You can do pretty much any GC investigation with this information.
Cool.
Very cool.
Did you want to jump into JIT stats for 5 minutes?
If we have a few minutes, I can mention something else about JIT if you like.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. So, all right, now we've gotten off of the GC. We're going to switch gears and talk about the JIT. This particular trace is not great for the JIT, so we'll see what we got. But there's another view called the JIT stats view. So you can see here we were in the GC stats view. Now I'm going to talk about this JIT stats view. And this is the just-in-time compiler for the .NET runtime. Mm-hmm. Now, normally, you only care about the JIT when it's using too much time. And usually that only happens on startup scenarios. Because once you've started up, you've probably JIT compiled everything you're going to need to compile, and then you're done. That's not always true. Sometimes you keep recycling app domains or doing something that always keeps refreshing the JIT. But most of the time, it's startup. So if you have a lot of startup time, and start out with either a CPU or a block or a thread time investigation, and you'd find out a lot of your time is being spent in the JIT. Mm-hmm. Now you want to say, okay, well, what exactly is being JITted? And that's what this view tells me. And so I can double click on it, and again, you get it per process. And so I'm going to pick this guy. Now, what this one shows is that for a particular process, in this case, this GC test 64, how many methods were JITted. Now, This one is a very small application, so it actually has very few. You can see that the total number of methods jitted were 26. If it's under 1,000, that's not bad. If it's 10,000 something, oh my God, what are you doing? Ideally, this number should be very small because NGen, you should be, hopefully most of your app is pre-compiled in one way or another. Mm-hmm. So what it'll show you is it will show you the total amount of time, and it will show it to you broken down by module. Now, it turns out this one only has one module, the EXE itself. But if there were 10 modules, those would be the modules you would NGen to get rid of that JIT time. So that's what this is handy. And then it shows you literally every single method. And so sometimes these are handy just to find out. You look at those and you go, oh my God, like I didn't expect those methods, like, you know, these classes to be run at startup. Like, oh, what's going on there? And so you can figure something out for that. But mostly what it's about is for you to look at this first table and see what DLLs you should be NGenning.
Yeah.
There is a guide here, this guide to background GC that will and this NGenning link that will talk about the mitigation. So the basic workflow for this is that you should probably be doing either a CPU time or a thread time investigation on startup, probably. And when you find out that lots of time is being spent in the runtime and in particular in the JIT, and you'll see that in the method names that are being, you know, on the stack of your CPU or thread time view. If you see that, then you want to say, okay, well, how do I get rid of that? And the answer usually is NGenning. And so I need to know what assemblies to NGen. And that's where you come here. And the other possibility, if you can't NGen, because NGenning does complicate deployment, we also have something called the background JIT, which isn't as good because we still are jitting, but we'll jit in parallel on another thread. Yeah. And so you can get usually about half of the jit time back. And you have to do a little work to turn that on, and that's what this thing explains.
Mm-hmm. So does Fusion logging come into this?
Not really. Fusion logging can be helpful. So the Fusion logging will tell you whether NGen images are being used. So sometimes you run into this situation where you have NGen the thing. You know, you have NGen your module, you come here and you say, I NGen that module.
Why is it being
am I still jitting? Yeah. And the answer is that you have to go back to Fusion log at that point. And the Fusion log, which we talked about a couple episodes ago.
I think we did, yeah.
It was one of the things that you could see in the events view. It will actually tell you why the NGen image isn't being used in a fairly good detail. And so that will tell us, how to fix it. And we'll see.
Yeah, good cool. to know.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's our show for this week. Thanks again for watching. Thanks to Vance to come and bailing us out. We were like, what are we going to talk about this week? Oh, Vance got some.
I always have stuff to talk about.
All right. Well, as always, if you have questions or comments, email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. Or put them in the show notes right down below.
Or come talk to us on Thursday.
Or come talk to us on Thursday if you're coming to Tech Ready. I probably won't be there, but Andrew will.
I will.
And
you better be there.
I'll be there. I'm talking.
Yeah, that's right. You'll both be there. All right. So that's our show. Again, thanks for watching, and go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Bye.